Okay, as mentioned, we are on chapter 19 of the book of Judges. We are going to be wrapping up the book of Judges tonight. I guess as far as a little housekeeping, we'll finish up Judges tonight. Then starting next week, we will go into the book of Ruth. And we will have the first part of the book of Ruth. And then the last study, the last Wednesday, will be the second part, Ruth part 2. And I will not be here on that last week, so I've asked Dave to lead us in that study, and he has graciously agreed to do that. Appreciate that, Dave. And so I'm sure you'll have a good study there for the last part of Ruth. Okay, but tonight we are starting chapter 19. We're going to look at the last three chapters. I would not be honest with you if I told you it was easy to prepare for this lesson, for these last three books or chapters. It was challenging. There's a lot of difficult things that we see in there, but I think there's things that we can learn from these three chapters that we're going to get into here in a few minutes. Last week, we studied chapter 17 and 18, and we'll go ahead and look at the review here on that. We started off talking about this man named Micah. And Micah, as we began the study, is returning the money that he'd stole from his mother. And so she takes it and she dedicates it to the Lord in his behalf. And we see the things that he did. He even made one of his sons a priest, and he took in a Levite, made him a priest. There were many things that made him appear as though they were very religious people, right? But the things that they were doing were just not in accordance with God's will and the law. The priest was not, or his son was not a Levite, which was, of course, not allowed. Had to be of the lineage of Aaron. And saw all the idols that they had. Obviously, the second commandment is not to have idols, you know, and molten images. And so they may have appeared to be religious, but they were not doing things in accordance with God's word, in accordance with the law. They had total disregard for God's law. And then the second part, the chapter 18, we see where Dan is seeking an inheritance for itself. As we recall, they did not take the land at the beginning, and so they were looking for land to be an inheritance for itself. They sent men to spy out the land, let's see. And then what was the city that they found that they were interested in taking? Laish. Yeah, Laish. And on their way, these men that are spying out the land, they come across Micah's house. And they ask the man that he made a priest, what is he doing there? And tells him he's serving Micah. And so they end up taking all the idols that he has, and they go on up to Laish. And towards the end of that chapter, we see where they destroy all the people in Laish, and they take the city there, and they set up the idols there and priests to serve for the tribe of Dan there. And, of course, as we see in that last bullet there, kind of showing the fact that God's laws and instructions were just being neglected. All this time, the house of God is there in Shiloh in verse 31, kind of showing that total disregard for God's laws and that the tabernacle just being neglected there. And in this study, we realize that Levite that was looking for a place to stay, you know, indicated obviously that the Levites and the priests, they weren't being supported at this time. That was a problem. There was disregard for God's laws. They weren't keeping the laws. And he was out of a job. Okay, so that's kind of the summary of last week. Any comments on that before we get into chapter 19? Yeah, and I think probably that one of the best ways to start our study tonight in chapter 19 is to go to the end, chapter 21. Look at the last verse in chapter 21 as we start. I think that kind of is a good premise to our study there. Verse 25 of chapter 21 says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." So I think that kind of sets the stage for what we're going to see here in chapters 19 through 21. Yeah, and what we see here, I think, you know, it really shows what can happen when nations ignore the laws of God and follow their own desires, as we saw in that last verse. Dave?
In my mind, those are two independent statements. Everybody did what was right in their own eyes, and there wasn't any king in this. Because when they got a king, they still did what was right. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the king was going to solve the problem.
Comments. Yeah, I think in a way these next three chapters are really good follow-up of Brian's lesson they brought up on Sunday night, learning to hate sin. When we get through this lesson, I think that's going to be one thing that we're going to hate sin even more when we see the things that come about from sin. In regards to what we see in the next three chapters, I think it was interesting that there is a time stamp here in these three chapters to just see what was mentioned about that gives some idea of when we're talking about in these three chapters. Looking at chapter 20, around verse 28 there. Who is the high priest? Phinehas, right? Phinehas was the high priest. He was the high priest before the death of Joshua. And we see that in Joshua chapter 22, verse 30. So, when you put that together, it appears that the things that we see here are happening kind of at the beginning of the period of the judges, is what it appears there. And that's kind of... seems kind of odd to me to realize that, because when you see what's going on in these three chapters, as we're going to get into, seems like it would be a time towards the end of the judges. Like, you know, things were getting worse and worse and worse, and then you see what happens here. But actually, it appears that the things that happen here happen fairly early in the period of the judges. So I thought that was interesting, and just wanted to mention that as we get started. Okay, we'll take the first three questions. Did we start on this side last time? We'll start on this side. Lamar?
What did the servant do?
Okay. So, yeah. So he went after her there in verse 3. Then her husband rose and went after her to speak kindly to her and bring her back, having a servant and a couple of donkeys with him. So she brought him into her father's. She brought him into her father's house, and when her father, the young woman, saw him, he was glad to meet him. And then we see there, through verses 5 through verse 9, her father tries to keep him there. He detains him for 3 days at first there in verse 5. And then after the 3 days, on the fourth day when he's getting ready to leave, there in verse 9, he asked him to stay again. Fifth day. And even after the fifth day, towards the latter part of the day, he asked him to stay again. But at that point, what did he say? What was his response when he asked him to stay? No, I'm leaving. I gotta go. Gotta get home. Right? There in verse 10. And so takes his concubine, and by the way, what's the difference between a concubine and a wife? What's the difference there? Okay. Yeah, and the duties seem to be pretty much the same. How about the rights? There's some differences in the rights. The inheritance rights are usually different there. So they start on their journey, verse 11. And they're on their way to, where are they on their way to? Where does this Levite live? Yeah, they're leaving Bethlehem. Yeah. And they're on their way to where's his home? The remote mountains of Ephraim. Yeah. So starting off from Bethlehem of Judah towards the remote mountains of Ephraim. And so there in verse 11, they take off on their journey. It's already getting late, so they need to find somewhere to stay. Happy to have him. Yeah, I don't think I have any answer to that. Does anybody have any thoughts on that as to why he might have tried to detain him for so long? Could be like the situation with Micah, maybe a little bit. Thinks he has a priest. Any other thoughts on that? So they're heading along, and it's getting dark. What does the servant suggest at this point? Yeah, let's go ahead and stay here at what was the name of that town? Was it Jabus? Yeah, thank you. However, the man was not willing to spend the night, so he rose and departed and came opposite Jabus, that is Jerusalem, with him where the two saddled donkeys, his concubine, was also with him. Okay, so they're near Jabez, his servant says, "Why don't we go ahead and just stay here for the night?" And what's the Levite's response? What do you think he's getting at when he says that? Yeah, these aren't our people here. We're gonna continue on. Maybe he thought it wasn't safe to stay there, and so they continue on, and then they end up staying. Where do they end up staying? All right. And then they get to Gibeah, and then would anybody take him in there? They're around verse 15. Verse 15, they turn aside there to go into the lodge of Gibeah, and when they went in, he sat down in the open square in the city, for no one would take them into his house to spend the night. Usually hospitality is kind of a big thing, but we don't see that here. Nobody's willing to take them in. So something doesn't seem right. Then verse 16, finally an old man comes from the field, and he asks him some questions. Where are you from and where are you going? You almost get the feeling there that he knows they're kind of out of place. You ain't from around here, are you? Where are you from and where are you going? But there, verse 20 and 21, what does he do for them? Takes them in, verse 21, brought them into his house and gave fodder to the donkeys, and they washed their feet, ate and drank.
With all the bad stuff going on in these three chapters, this is kind of a refreshing look at hospitality here. The statement, let all your needs be not as far as you. That's a great attitude on this part. There's a lot surrounding all of this that's unsafe.
Seems like he kind of knew that something might happen here if I don't get you in my house pretty quick. Yeah. Okay, so they're down in Bethlehem. They're coming from Bethlehem, right? And they're heading north to Gibeah. Here, they're in the middle parts of Benjamin. Of course, they're headed up to the mountains, remote mountains of Ephraim, and they're going to stay there in Gibeah. Another place to think about during our study is going to be those that are at Jabesh-Gilead. Right? That's going to come into play here in a few minutes when we talk about them here in chapter 21. That's it. They're just heading north there from Bethlehem. Stay there All right, let's go ahead and answer the next question.
Describe a terrible incident that took place in Gibeah. Do you recall an incident similar to this one? Well, as they were sitting there enjoying themselves in the man's house, some men from Gibeah banged on the door and just sent out this Levite that wanted to have relations with him. And
Yeah, the story you see here really just shows the moral depravity of Israel at this time. So verse 22, when in Gibeah the men surround the city and the house, just openly surrounding the city, right? This isn't done in private and you know, trying to hide it. They're just openly surrounding the house and demand that the visitor come out so they can know him carnally, there in verse 22. And then we see that the old man, what does he do? How does he respond? How does the old man respond to kind of handle the situation? What does he offer up? Yeah, he offers up his virgin daughter and the concubine of the man to those men outside. Just seems kind of odd there. I can't imagine how he could even think of such a thing, to just offer up his daughter and the man's concubine. Yeah, and yet he still offered them up. You know, it almost seems like, you know, when you look at what happened here, to offer them up almost made them just as guilty as those on the outside. You know?
So it's a little confusing. I mean, there's a lot of men and men, and it was the man that took him in that offered his virgin daughter, mm-hmm. right? But it was the Levite that eventually gave them his concubine, right?
Yeah. I believe that's correct.
So the man took his concubine and brought her out to them. So it was the Levite that brought the concubine. So the man never had to offer his virgin daughter. Yeah. So, right?
Right. That's my understanding. Yeah, just a terrible situation that we see there. All right, so just summarizing what happens here now, reading verse 25 and 26. But the men would not heed him, so the man took his concubine and brought her out to them, and they knew her and abused her all night until morning. When the day began to break, they let her go. Then the woman came as the day was drawing and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was till it was light. And then we know her master comes out, he's ready to go, says, let's go. And there's no response. Realizes she's dead at that point. Let's do number 5. Yeah, let's do something about this, right? This act that we saw here wasn't something done in private. It was something that probably many people saw, maybe even those that were claimed to still be righteous, probably would have saw this stuff. This was all done in the open. So it seems to me in verse 29 there, in verse 30, what he's doing there, he says, consider it, confer, speak up. Let's let it be known what's going on here. And let's take care of this matter. He's insisting that Israel acknowledge the wickedness and do something about it. Just seems odd that as openly as they did this, isn't it kind of surprising that nothing came to light up until this point? You know, as open as they were about this sort of thing, I think that's kind of why he does what he does. He's sending a major message. Yes, sir. Yeah, we didn't go over that in detail. It was just answered in the question. Yeah.
Same thing happened there. There was only three people righteous in the whole city of Solomon.
Yeah. How are we supposed to deal with sin and wickedness? We hide it? Sweep it under the rug?
Hate it.
Expose it. Ephesians 5, 11 and 12 is a New Testament passage that talks about this. Ephesians 5, 11 says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. When we see error, wickedness, sin, we need to make sure we're exposing those things. Good point. There's a right way to do it, isn't there? But action must be taken. Yes, sir.
And obviously what's going on here is that this is a condition that would just give this one snapshot of what goes on. This is a condition that has existed there for some time. So you set up this body of land, times and say, see, oh, y'all come in. This is the way they're living there. And it's been prevented and overlooked and not confronted. And then when this travesty,
number six.
Was there an effort to settle a dispute without war? And the answer turned over to them so they can speak to them. And they wanted to protect them. This is not a typical one. No, we don't know what we're going to do. Evils that go along in our country. Maybe right down the corner. If we evaluate what has taken place, consider it, and then speak up if we make a statement.
You'd think it would be cut and dry here. Turn them over, let them be punished. But they don't want to. Just, wow. Wow. Number 7. Okay, so in verse 13, Benjamin's told to deliver up the wicked men so they can be put to death. Surprisingly, they refused. This is appalling here to see that they're not willing to do that as a tribe. You know, how could they have reached this level of moral depravity here, to not give up the men that did those things? And then when you think about the influence that they've had up to this point, they've had the other nations that were influencing them, right, with idolatry and the wickedness from those things. You know, that the worship that came. We talked about a few of the idols that they worshipped. Ashtoreth and Molech are two of the gods in the land at that time that would have had influence on them. And as we know, Ashtoreth was a god that included temple prostitution as part of its worship. So you can see how that may have played into some of the things that we see in our study tonight. The worship of Molech involved human sacrifice. And so when you see some of these things, you can see how those things would have had a moral impact on these people. And, you know, I guess when you think about that, and then you go back and you reread, you know, the warnings that God had given the people before they went into the land and what they were supposed to do, to completely drive out the people, Deuteronomy 7, 1 through 5 and 16, Joshua 23, 11 through 13. God telling them, what's going to happen if you don't completely drive these people out? He knew what the temptation was going to be for them. So, you know, it's no wonder they've gotten to this point when they failed to follow those instructions. And so they're influenced by these people and these kinds of these gods that involve these types of acts certainly impacted their moral compass. God gives us instruction today, doesn't he? He gives us instruction today on how we're to live. It would do us well, of course, think, you know, just in application from that, make sure that we know His Word well, what He expects of us. All right, question 8.
Thank you.
how did Israel determine who was going to go up against Gibeah to begin with? They went to the
Lord.
Yeah, it's interesting that it took this battle about to ensue. Now we see him going to the Lord, don't we? It's kind of interesting to see that. And they go to him three times after each time, right? One, two, three. Finally, the third time, what does the Lord tell them? What does it say? Who does it say defeated Benjamin? The Lord. Yeah, God, the Lord. Yeah. Yeah. Verse 35 there. And then there was a signal that they used to turn back. Remember that? They had a plan, right, to draw the people out, and then at a certain time, when they saw this signal, they would head back. What was that signal? Turn back towards Gibeah, Benjamin.
They saw a city burning, a little smoke coming up.
Yeah, the smoke was a signal to turn back on them. To draw them out and then turn back on them. There was a battle plan there, and then they defeated them. Verse 43 through 46. They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah toward the east. 18,000 men of Benjamin fell. All these were men of valor. Then they turned and fled away, fled towards the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. And they cut down 5,000 of them on the highways. Then they pursued them relentlessly up to Gidom and killed 2,000 of them. So all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword. All these were men of valor. So all who fell of Benjamin that day were 25,000 men. Yeah. So. Say again?
Didn't leave, but 1,000 killed them all except 1,000. I think it was 26,000 that came out.
Yeah. Why were there so many losses? Any thoughts on why there were so many losses on Israel's side? Brother Jim? Sir?
They had too many.
They had too many. Yeah. Good point. Yeah, I kind of saw it the same way as well. There must be something else going on here. All of Israel is going to feel the effects of this battle, it seems. Any other thoughts on that?
Israel lost 40,000.
A lot of loss. Then in verse 48, they set fire to the cities and struck down the children of Benjamin with the sword there. All right, let's take number 9.
What rash vow did Israel make concerning Benjamin that they later regretted? They vowed not to their fathers.
What was their attitude towards this? Did you see that in verse, or about verse 3 or so? Wept bitterly. They were without the tribe of Benjamin. And then you see a question there in verse 3. It said, O Lord God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel? that today there should be one tribe missing in Israel? Is there an answer to that question? Why has this come to pass? Yeah. That's right. Wickedness of Israel. Yeah. Disregard for God's laws. Doing what's right in their own eyes. Yeah. All right, that's the last bell. Thank y'all.